It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
The state of our economy. Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. We may learn as soon as Thursday if America is officially in a recession. Economists say two consecutive quarters of contraction in the GDP, that's the gross domestic product, that is the very definition of a recession. Former Treasury Secretary Larry Summers says, we're there.
I think there's a very high likelihood of recession when we've been in this kind of situation before. Recession has essentially always followed.
Tennessee Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn says the Biden administration's tax and spend policies are making the situation worse.
You cannot tax your way out of inflation. You cannot tax your way to prosperity. The best way to see an economic recovery is to lower those taxes.
The Federal Reserve Board expected to hike interest rates again this week to tap the brakes on sky-high inflation. And inflation remains the top concern of voters, and a growing number of Democratic voters say the president's become a drag on the party heading into the midterms. Political pundit Sean Duffy.
If you support Joe Biden, you have to support and defend the policies of Joe Biden, which is really bad for Democrats electorally. If you throw Joe Biden over the bus, right, or off the ship, then he's a lame duck president, and there's 2 years left in the presidency. So they're in this quandary. You're not going to get different policies with a different presidential candidate. Joe Biden could be fine. Joe Biden could save his presidency if he would change course.
White House Chief of Staff Ron Klain.
I think the president's approval rating is kind of a reflection of how people feel about what's going on in the country. And some things in our country aren't going well, not because of what the president did, but in fact because of what the president's fighting against.
A Washington Post op-ed today calls on President Biden to pledge himself to being a one-term president so as to save Democrats from taking a shellacking in the midterms. The president continues to isolate at the White House as he recovers from COVID. The commander-in-chief is said to be suffering from a sore throat, but other than that, seems to be improving health-wise. Correspondent Maura Barrett.
During testing, it was found that he most likely has the Omicron subvariant, BA5. That's the one that's sweeping across the country right now, accounting for 80% of cases.
The president's personal physician says Mr. Biden has wrapped up a 3-day regimen of the antiviral Paxlovid, but he will remain in quarantine until further notice. West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin has COVID as well. The moderate Democrat says his symptoms are mild. Manchin is both fully vaccinated and twice boosted. Vice President Harris in Indiana today, decrying the Hoosier State's new effort to protect the life of the unborn. The legislation would ban most abortions, except in cases of rape, incest, or to protect the life of the mother. A group of House Republicans touring the border today near Eagle Pass, Texas. A community that's become a flashpoint in the ongoing migrant crisis. Texas Congressman Tony Gonzalez.
I represent 42% of the southern border. There's certainly nobody in my district that thinks it's secure. We can't wait on the administration to fix our problems. Congress is an equal body of government. We got to roll up our sleeves.
So far this year, Border Patrol agents have encountered more than 1.7 million migrants crossing the southern border illegally. That is already more than all of last year. The Royal Bahamas Defense Force has recovered the bodies of 17 migrants after a boat headed for the U.S. capsized. Bahamas Prime Minister Philip Davis.
A multi-agency investigation is underway to determine the full circumstances surrounding a suspected human smuggling operation.
Up to 200 mostly Haitian migrants were aboard that boat. A fast-moving wildfire has grown dramatically near Yosemite National Park in California.
An explosive fire just outside Yosemite National Park is burning out of control, scorching more than 15,000 acres over the weekend. Fueled by bone-dry vegetation and dead trees, the fire was sparked Friday near the Mariposa County town of Mid Pines.
We're going to have to rename our town. I mean, the pines probably aren't going to make it.
Beth Pratt is a regional executive director for the National Wildlife Federation and a Mid Pines resident.
The oaks are going. Oaks are extremely adapted to drought. If those guys are going, you know you're in trouble.
This year, firefighters in California have been dispatched to more than 4,000 wildfires, and the Oak Fire is so far the state's largest.
Correspondent Jonathan Vigliotti. Big Poppy got some big love in Cooperstown yesterday. The former Red Sox slugger inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame.
I want you guys to know that even with the God-given talent that I have, I don't think I would have made it without the support and love coming from all of you.
David Ortiz is the first career designated hitter to be selected in his first year of eligibility. He is the fourth Dominican-born player to be enshrined at the Baseball Hall of Fame. Randy Snavely, of course, will have more on the Ortiz induction ceremony coming up in sports. Also ahead today is the Red Wave for real. The Q Creek Nine, 20 years later, and a force in New York State politics has died. We'll tell you who he was after this.
Well, good afternoon. The cold front that spawned big showers and thunderstorms in the past 24 hours is now setting the stage for some cooler, clearer, calmer weather. I'll have forecast details coming up in 10.
All right, Kevin Williams at the Weather Center. A heat health emergency has just been extended until 8 o'clock tonight for Pennsylvania's largest city. Sunday was the hottest day in 10 years in Philadelphia.
It was, like, really bad. Yeah, we're all sweating, panting.
Trying to chill in the heat. It's kind of hard.
At least two deaths in Philly blamed on the intense heat. But as Kevin alluded to, there will be a noticeable cool down this afternoon, but the heat will build again as the work week wears on. Locally, thousands of homes and businesses lost power late Sunday and early this morning due to strong thunderstorms that ripped through the Twin Tiers. The man accused of ambushing two Rochester police officers last week, killing one and injuring another, makes his next court appearance on Wednesday. 21-year-old Kelvin Vickers of Boston pled not guilty to murder charges. State Senate Minority Leader Rob Wart says New York's soft-on-crime policies have made our communities less safe.
I just don't know how the people of Monroe County and the city of Rochester can look at what's happening here and say that they are safer today. I don't know how the men and women who wear the uniform for the RPD, for the Monroe County Sheriff's Office, or any town law enforcement agency can look and say, we are safer today after 4 years of one-party rule.
Police say 54-year-old Tony Mazurkiewicz and his partner Sino Sang were sitting in an unmarked patrol car last Thursday evening when Vickers walked up from behind and, for whatever reason, fired off 17 rounds. A 15-year-old girl inside a nearby home was grazed by a bullet. Vickers is being held without bail at the Monroe County Jail. Rochester's crime problem continues to be the topic of much debate. Last year, the Flower City saw a record 81 homicides and already is on pace to break that this year.
At this pace, you can expect at least another 40 homicides between now and New Year's Day. So imagine putting out 40 caskets right now that are empty and watching them get filled up one day at a time.
That is retired Gates, New York Police Chief Jim Van Brederode. The man accused of trying to stab New York gubernatorial candidate Lee Zeldin at a campaign event near Rochester. That man faces a federal detention hearing this Wednesday. Zeldin spoke to Fox News about his ordeal.
This federal charge that he's facing is because I am a member of Congress. And if I wasn't a member of Congress, he would have been instantly released, and he'd still be on the streets right now.
The suspect, 43-year-old David Jacobonis, was initially released under New York's bail reform law, but later taken into custody. Security expert Lou Cifolo.
We just had what certainly looked like an assassination attempt to me on Congressman Lee Zeldin, and that person who attempted to assassinate a sitting congressman walked out the door. And if not for the federal charges, would still be free.
Jacobon is facing 10 years in prison if convicted of assault. Again, he'll be in court again this Wednesday. A pastor was robbed at gunpoint yesterday in New York City during the middle of a sermon that was being live streamed on the internet.
All right.
Bishop Lamar Whitehead says he believes he was targeted.
One went to my wife and took all her jewelry and had the gun in front of my 8-month-old baby's face. Took off my bishop's ring, my wedding band.
It all happened while the church service was being live streamed there in Brooklyn, New York. Unbelievable. The former chairman of the New York State Conservative Party has died. We get that story from Family Life's Tracy Lynn.
Mike Long passed away yesterday at the age of 82. His political career spanned 6 decades. The conservative worked as a volunteer for Barry Goldwater's presidential campaign in 1964. Long was also instrumental in getting U.S. Senator Al D'Amato and Governor George Pataki elected to multiple terms. New York Republican Party Chairman Nick Langworthy called Long a force in New York state politics. Tracy Lynn, Family Life News.
All right, Tracy, thank you for that. This week marks the 20th anniversary of the Kew Creek mine disaster in Somerset, Pennsylvania. It had a happy outcome.
9 for 9. Yes, sir.
After 77 hours, all 9 Kew Creek miners trapped underground were brought to the surface alive.
All 9 are alive.
That was then Pennsylvania Governor Mark Schweiker. 20 years ago this week, John Unger is one of the 9 rescued miners. He remembers how close it happened to 9/11.
The biggest thing was Flight 93 was over the hill and everybody died. Here, everybody lived, and it was a complete miracle that we were all here.
During yesterday's Pirates-Marlins game at PNC Park, one of the miners from the Kew Creek mine got to throw out the first pitch. The 146th annual Troy Fair in Troy, Pennsylvania kicked off today. It runs through Saturday. This Thursday, all active duty service members and military veterans can get into the fair free of charge. Everyone else must pay $10. This year's Troy Fair includes bull rides, a tractor pull, and of course the fan favorite demolition derby. It's a pretty simple concept, folks. If you want to live longer, you got to exercise more.
Harvard researchers conducted an analysis of more than 100,000 individuals over a 30-year follow-up period. They found that adults who performed 2 to 4 times the currently recommended amount of moderate or vigorous activity a week have a significantly reduced risk of mortality. Currently, the American Heart Association recommends that adults get at least 150 minutes per week of moderate aerobic exercise or 75 minutes per week of vigorous aerobic exercise or a combination of both. I'm Michael Kastner.
We are coming up on 14 past the hour. Sports next on the Noon Report.
Good afternoon, I'm Randy Snavely. Bob, the Yankees continue to roll as they knocked off Baltimore 6-0 yesterday. Nestor Cortez picking up his 8th win of the season, throwing 6 shutout innings. And Aaron Judge went deep again. He now has 37 home runs on the season. Toronto, Minnesota, the White Sox, KC, Texas, and Houston, your other American League winners. In the National League, the Mets avoided a sweep at the hands of the Padres, thanks in part to a Pete Alonso 3-run home run, and the Mets beat San Diego 8-5. Phillies were swept by the Cubs, falling 4-3. O'Neal Cruz went deep for Pittsburgh, but the Pirates lost a 10-inning affair to Miami, 6-5 the final there. Elsewhere, the Reds, Brewers, Dodgers, and Nationals all picked up victories. The one interleague contest saw the Angels blow out the Braves 9-1. Big Papi is the latest legend to experience baseball immortality as David Ortiz became the 4th Dominican-born player to be enshrined at Baseball's Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. Big Papi hit 541 home runs and won 3 World Series titles during his 20-year career. NASCAR at Pocono Raceway. Denny Hamlin finished first, but then was DQ'd after failing a post-race inspection. So Kyle Busch, who finished second, moved up to the top spot. But he also was disqualified, so Chase Elliott, who originally came in third, was the winner. Tyler Reddick came in second, and Daniel Suarez finished third. That is a look at sports.
All right, Randy, man, thank you kindly. Still to come on the Noon Report, the Pope in Canada, why Communist China is buying U.S. farmland, and Trump wins a straw poll, but will he run in 2024?
Will Republican senators aid and abet the further erosion of religious liberty and the institution of marriage? We may find out in the next 2 weeks. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. According to NBC News, Senator Chuck Schumer of New York plans a vote on the misleadingly named Respect for Marriage Act, perhaps as soon as the next 2 weeks. While the name of the bill sounds as if it affirms marriage, it would, in fact, redefine marriage, finally, and from the federal legislature into law. This new understanding would firmly root marriage in nothing more than abstract desire, redefining it from the institution it's always been, one that offered a bedrock for civilization to thrive by reflecting the biological realities of who men and women really are. It would also shore up and extend the application of Obergefell v. Hodges, the landmark Supreme Court decision that overturned marriage laws in dozens of states, enshrined same-sex marriage as the law of the land, and redefined the institution of marriage by judicial fiat. Part of the political calculation with advancing this bill at this time is to mitigate what many predict to be a grim reaping for the Democratic Party in the midterm elections. However, in the House vote, 47 Republicans joined every single Democrat to advance it to the Senate. More than a few self-described conservatives clearly have a fuzzy view about what marriage is and the role that it plays in a healthy society. So, if this bill could find the support of 10 Republicans in the Senate who have this fuzzy view of marriage, it would pass. It would secure the federal government's claim on marriage. It would create less room for people who object to redefine marriage. In other words, this would be a bill, if turned to law, that would create more situations like Jack Phillips, Baronelle Stutzman, and Lori Smith. 5 Republican senators have already indicated support for the bill: Tillis, Collins, Murkowski, and Johnson. There's at least another 6 or so that appear to be on the fence. These Republicans do not care about protecting conscience rights. What they want to see is this particular controversial issue behind them once and for all. So we have to convince them otherwise. Codifying a redefined understanding of marriage, something this bill fails to even define, will only incentivize local governments and activist groups to use state power to suppress dissent. There are no conscience protections in the bill, and there will be none added. Even more, this bill would further enable the redefinition of marriage to include even more relational arrangements than what Obergefell created. Obergefell took marriage from a sexually diverse institution to a same-sex institution. But at the time, the T was largely absent from the Orientation and Identity acronym. Now, the T basically runs the show, and the very idea of a gender binary is seen to be oppressive, outdated, and harmful. And it is the LGBTQ community that's referred to throughout the bill, which means that if this bill passes, marriage would become a genderless institution by the force of law. This will only further harm children and further confuse reality. People of faith and conscience must act. The best next step at this point, given the short amount of time we have on our hands, is to call your senators, especially if they are Republicans, especially if they have not been clear to this point on where they stand on the Respect for Marriage Act. Here's a hint. If you live in North Carolina, Missouri, West Virginia, Louisiana, and Pennsylvania, not all of your senators have been clear. And if you're in Kentucky, it would be helpful to call the office of the Senate Minority Leader. Because time is short, please call their offices. Please remind them that political convenience is not worth the cultural persecution this would bring. Please remind them that they were elected to protect the conscience rights of their constituents. Please remind them that you expect them to vote by conscience, not convenience. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
20 past the hour, Kevin Williams next.
Good afternoon. Here is your family life weather forecast for For the rest of the afternoon, there can still be an isolated shower or thunder shower in parts of central and eastern Pennsylvania and the eastern southern tier of New York. Otherwise, a good helping of sunshine with lowering humidity, freshening breezes, and high temperatures mid-70s to the mid-80s. For tonight, clear to partly cloudy, more comfortable, low temperatures mid-50s to the low 60s. Sunshine tomorrow with a high temp near 80 and sunshine low to mid-80s with some mixed clouds on Wednesday.
All right, Kevin Williams, this is the Noon Report on Family Life. I'm your host, Bob Price. Here's what's going on this Monday afternoon, the 25th of July. Oppressive heat and tinderbox conditions fueling wildfires in 15 states, and one of the largest is burning near Yosemite National Park in California. Steve Grant and his new bride lost their home to the flames.
This home that we had just gotten married at 2 weeks ago, it explodes, and you're looking at it on a mobile phone.
Tom Waite with KCBS in Los Angeles.
When you have fires burning through such brittle, dry fuel, it's very difficult to contain these fires, and you know, we just see them getting worse every year.
Several heat-related fatalities being reported in New York and Pennsylvania. Boston hit 100 degrees yesterday, breaking a 90-year-old heat record. The red wave that Republicans are hoping for in November may be a bit premature. The latest Cook Political Report shows while the U.S. House definitely looks good for the GOP, the U.S. Senate is still very much up in the air. GOP strategist Sarah Carter says Democratic Senate candidates are raising a lot more money than Republicans.
I'm not as threatened by the polling right now, but there is an issue with the fundraising. And I think that when you see more small donors giving to Democrats, that better be an eye-opener.
Conservative commentator Clay Travis predicts Republicans will win 3 seats in the Senate and at least 25 in the House,
which would put them in line at 25 for the biggest GOP majority in the last 100 years in the House.
Both Travis and Carter say the Latino vote will be crucial in deciding which party controls Congress next year. Former President Donald Trump dominated a GOP presidential straw poll over the weekend. Happened at the Turning Point USA convention in Tampa, Florida. That survey of 5,000 conservative activists showed nearly 80% want Trump to be the Republican presidential nominee in 2024, 19% picked Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. Prosecutors are expecting to decide soon whether to charge Hunter Biden, the president's son, accused of foreign lobbying violations, tax violations, and making false statements. Former federal prosecutor Jonathan Fahey expects a plea deal for Hunter Biden.
And you do wonder, will he be treated differently? It really is an open question, because the way the Department of Justice is handling this investigation, they decided not to appoint a special counsel. So there's really politics all over this thing.
An indictment could be announced before the November midterms. Pope Francis is in Canada, where he'll deliver an historic apology today for abuses that happened during the 19th and 20th centuries. Here's correspondent Chris Livesay.
The Canadian government forced more than 100,000 Indigenous children into residential schools where they were forbidden to speak their language, assimilated and Christianized. These schools were mostly managed by the church. The last one closed in 1997. Many children were also abused, and death rates were exponentially higher compared to the general population, with students succumbing to malnutrition and disease.
The Pope making his first visit to North America in 7 years. Two more Americans have died in Ukraine.
Luke Luzishin, originally from New Jersey, and Brian Young, who came from California, were killed in action this past week in eastern Ukraine. American volunteers. They'd signed up to fight here with Ukrainian forces battling against Russia's invading army.
There is a good side and evil side. They fight for good.
Colonel Ruslan was their commanding officer.
Really?
He told us Luzishin was injured by Russian tank shelling, and as Young went to help, more fire killed them both.
Why did they volunteer to come to Ukraine?
I asked Brian once in air, and he replied, "Sir, if we Americans don't help you winning this war, the next step of Russia will be knocking to our doors."
At their home in Calabash, North Carolina, Luzishin's parents, Kathy and George, are struggling. Their 31-year-old son has left behind 2 young children of his own.
I tried to get him to come home many times. He said he couldn't leave his friends. It was David versus Goliath.
he was ready to stand up and fight for the little guy.
That report from Holly Williams in Ukraine. Communist China is buying up huge chunks of land in these United States. Dean Chang is a senior fellow with the Heritage Foundation.
Because China is a food importer, they are buying a lot of farmland in the hopes of making sure that they will be able to access food supplies. Of course, if that means leaving Americans short, they're not particularly concerned about that. And if you show up like the Chinese can with billions of dollars and just suddenly start buying up food, you're going to start altering food prices here in the United States.
The Chinese have made over $6 billion in real estate deals in places like Florida, California, Oklahoma, Indiana, and New York. It's 25 past the hour. You're plugged into the Noon Report on Family Life.
Welcome back to Faith Foundations, a new summer feature on Family Life. Every Monday, we will look to answer some of the questions Christians have in their walk with the Lord. Today, we sit down with Dustin Jizmichin of Summit Ministries in Colorado. Can you fill our listeners in on what the meta-narrative is in the biblical sense?
The meta-narrative, really, just by definition, is kind of an overarching story that gives us meaning and purpose. So meta-narratives can branch off into other worldviews and other ways of thinking, but the biblical meta-narrative is looking at the Bible as an overarching story that helps me develop my meaning and purpose. So things we've talked about, but how do we see it in the whole landscape of the Scriptures, not just a fragmented Bible story, so to speak?
And how do we view it in that sense? As you mentioned, I like how you phrase it, as more of a collaborative story.
I think fundamentally, when people talk about the biblical meta-narrative, they kind of break it down into, you probably heard this phrase, creation, fall, redemption, consummation, just as this overarching story that's been threaded throughout Scripture. Usually when I talk about it, I actually also include Israel as a fundamental part of that story, because in Israel, we find much of who God has called his people to be, culminating in the person of Jesus, and then moved into the church after Christ's resurrection.
Why is the biblical meta-narrative so important to Christians?
It helps us understand, I think, fundamental questions about life. Why am I here? What's my purpose? I think many times in America, we get ahead of ourselves. We ask the questions, what can I do, without actually pulling back and asking the question, what am I for? If we know what we are for, then that informs the questions of what I am to do. The Bible is really narrating and claiming to be the true story for all people for all time. I mean, Genesis 1:1 is, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. This is a statement that, if true, it's true for all people for all time.
So much of what we're seeing going on in the world can relate to a lot of biblical themes, and one of those is identity, our identity. What can we take away from the image of God and who we were created by and whose we are from this perspective of the meta-narrative?
When I teach on identity with our students at Summit, I look at how theologians have talked about what it means to be made in God's image, and not going into the depths of what others have said. But the one I lean into is, I think the best understanding is, to be made in God's image is to be a functional representative of God, not fully taking on characteristics of God, though there are elements of that, but representing. And the way I tell the story is, imagine, Brandon, if you were king of England or something like that, and you wanted to conquer France, and you conquered France and took over, and you're like, I don't really want to stay here, but I want to rule over these people. What you're going to do is, you're going to instill somebody to represent your rule and reign to the French people. And in many ways, God putting humans on the earth is this functional representation, a viceroy or a steward, to represent who our God and King is by how we actually rule and reign. The fall obviously corrupted that deeply, but the understanding of it was, we were actually going to functionally represent God in the world.
In the sense of time, if there's maybe another takeaway or two that you think are really important for Christians to hear on the meta-narrative, what would it be?
Yeah, one of the things that we've got to be careful of when it comes to the Scriptures is, it's just the idea of seeing it only as bits and pieces, nuggets of information, or almost treating it like a book of Proverbs or maybe an Aesop's fable. Instead of seeing it as a whole story, we reduce it to individual stories or individual verses or individual chapters. Well, that's not bad if it doesn't have the foundational piece we're missing so much of what God is trying to weave through those stories, the depth that is much richer. A good example of this is the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I had only watched 5 movies going up into the last 2 where the whole story comes to a head. While I understood what had happened, I didn't understand the full nature because there was characters I didn't understand. There were stories and plot lines that I had to do my best to fill in the gap. Whereas if you had seen all of it, culminating in the end, all of it makes so much more sense because you're actually engrossed in the entirety of the story, not just fragmenting verses and sections and ignoring different parts of the Bible. When we do that, we run the risk of we become the authority of the scriptures rather than the scriptures themselves. When we pick and choose what we think is and is important, we become the ones that are actually saying what it is instead of our Father who gave us the entirety of the Bible to be learned and to understand his nature and his purposes for the world.
That's Dustin Jizmichin of Summit Ministries in Colorado, our guest today on Faith Foundations, which airs every Monday over the summer as we look to answer some of the questions Christians have in their walk with the Lord.
All right, good stuff as always, Brandon. Thank you very much. You can listen to all our Faith Foundations features online at familylife.org/news.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. Showers and thundery downpours resulting from a cold front brought beneficial rain, in some cases too much of a good thing. But that activity is fading now with the cold front working east and south and out of the area. In its wake, friendly high pressure will build in with some lovely nights and days ahead. So for the rest of the afternoon, there can still be an isolated shower or thunder shower in parts of central and eastern Pennsylvania and the eastern southern tier of New York. Otherwise, a good helping of sunshine with lowering humidity, freshening breezes, and high temperatures mid-70s to the mid-80s. For tonight, clear to partly cloudy, more comfortable, low temperatures mid-50s to the low 60s. Sunshine tomorrow with a high temp near 80, and sunshine low to mid-80s with some mixed clouds on Wednesday. Could be a couple showers and thundershowers on Wednesday, though, in parts of Pennsylvania south of Interstate 80.
All right, Kevin Williams, thank you very much. Finally at noon, a chess robot will need to be reprogrammed after breaking a 7-year-old's finger during a match. Happened last week at the Moscow Chess Open. Sounds like that bot needs some anger management. The boy went to make a move when the robot's mechanical arm grabbed his finger and clamped down. Adults in the room rushed in to help free the boy's hand. The president of the Moscow Chess Federation says the boy apparently rushed to move before the robot was ready. That's when things went sideways for that little guy. Fortunately, the 7-year-old will make a full recovery, but the same cannot be said for his robot opponent. It's back to the drawing board for the bot. Can't be doing that. That's the world we live in. Monday, the 25th of July. I'm Bob Price. Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.